p.m. And the first item on our agenda is roll call.
Mayor Rees.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez G.
Here.
Councilmember Rabinov.
Here.
Councilmember Natoli.
Here.
And for the record, Councilmember Higginbotham is absent.
Okay, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is the invocation followed by the Pledge of Allegiance by Dr. Paul Jones. Would you please stand and remain standing?
Will you please bow your heart in prayer with me? Our Heavenly Father, we read and reread how our forefathers have trusted your leadership and your divine providence in the founding and development of our great republic, the United States of America. It was during the French and Indian War at the Battle of Monongahela that Colonel George Washington, a man who was daily in prayer, was divinely protected. 86 British and American officers were involved in battle. Colonel George Washington was the only officer on horseback who was not killed, and Indians repeatedly testified they shot at him. And years later, the Indian chief sought out Colonel Washington, and the chief said, "I am the chief and ruler over many tribes. I called to my men and said, 'Let your aim be certain, and Washington dies.' Our rifles were leveled, and except for you, knew not how to miss. 'Twas all in vain, for a power mightier than we shielded you. And I'm come to pay homage to the man who is the particular favorite of heaven." Unquote. Colonel George Washington later wrote to his brother John, "By the all-powerful dispensation of Providence, I've been protected beyond all human probability and expectation. For I had 4 bullets through my coat and 2 horses shot from under me. Yet I escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side of me." Unquote. Such instances as the above caused our forefathers to believe in their hearts and to print on our currency, "In God we trust." And today we join them and boldly affirm this truth. We ask that your eternal presence will be mightily evident in our council meeting tonight. May our mayor and her colleagues and their support staff earnestly seek your divine will as they consider each item on the agenda. Grant that understanding far beyond their normal intellect would be graciously bestowed on them from God as they concern themselves with current and future needs of our city, its citizens, and our guests. We invoke your blessings upon each of them as they strive to serve us and make proper decisions that would benefit our beautiful city. Again, we say thank you that we are privileged to live here in Pismo Beach, the gem of California's Central Coast. This invocation we pray in the name of our personal Savior and Lord. Amen. Amen. Would you please face the flag, putting your hand over your heart, and repeat after me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jones, and welcome back. They excused themselves the initial discussion of it.
Oh, so no, okay. Have to do so that it would again. Be you and I.
Right.
Right.
I'm sorry. Thank you very
you
much.
Need a majority
for
vote.
Thank you, Mary Ann, for that explanation.
You're very welcome. Okay, the first presentation is an introduction of new employees and
yes,
with the planning director.
I'd like to come over the podium and introduce Don Moore.
Okay.
Most of you know Don Moore as our building inspector, and Don's worked for the city for 7 years. He started as a beginning building inspector and has worked up through the ranks. He's a certified combination building inspector, and he last fall passed a certification for a chief building official. And let me tell you one thing is certification of a combination building inspector, which places you at a level of expertise in electrical, plumbing, mechanical, and structural is quite an accomplishment. To go farther and pass also the chief building official's certification is a lot of hard work. It's equal to a college degree. It's actually harder because you get the certification. However, you have to keep studying because the codes change and the products change, and so it's a never-ending learning process and management process. But I'm very pleased to announce that Dawn is our new building official and that Dawn has done inspections on our special projects way above his other duties over the years, and so I'm very pleased, and I know Dawn will continue his efforts in providing the quality of service that we come to know in Pismo Beach, and I'll turn it over to Dawn.
Congratulations, Dawn. Would you like to say a few words?
Yes, I'd just like to thank Randy Bloom for all he's done for me over the past few years and making sure I got all the education and training and certification and ultimately obtaining the job that I wanted. I look forward to doing a good service for you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have another new employee in the police department?
Yes, not one, but two, actually.
Two?
One of one you might recognize. It's my pleasure, Mayor and Council, to introduce our two newest officers. First, to my right, your left, we have Officer Alan Darrow. And one of the keys to success in law enforcement is ability to communicate and talk to people. Officer Darrow is a lateral officer, comes to us from Cal Poly. And if you can get along well with all those college students in a college setting, you're going to do real well here. So I have high expectations for Alan. He's not new to Pismo Beach, however. He's assisted us the last several years during our 4th of July fireworks event, volunteering to come over and work on loan from Cal Poly as a bicycle officer for us that night. So now he will still be doing it, but just with one of our uniforms. And our brand newest officer was sworn in yesterday, Ms. Shannon Adams, behind me. Shannon recently left a promising career in real estate, so we know that she has a sparkling personality and is incredibly intelligent to be in that field. She also was a reserve officer for the Rio Grande Police Department and spent a number of years with the Fresno City Police Department and got rave reviews there. In fact, they said that had she stayed there, she'd probably be a sergeant at this point in her career. So she's also going to have a bright future with us, so I'd like to welcome both employees and maybe give an opportunity to say a few words.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to work in the city of Pismo Beach. You know, last week I live in Templeton, and when I left my house, I looked at the thermometer inside my truck, and it said 96 degrees. So as I get down here into Pismo, I'm thinking about that bulletproof vest I have to put on and all that clothing. And when I got down here, I looked up at the thermometer, and it said 69 degrees. I love Pismo Beach. I'm going to love working here. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
I also come from where it's very hot, so I think I even beat 94 degrees, so I'm also very happy to be here, also very happy to be with this department, and looking forward to doing the best job I can for the community. Thanks.
Welcome to both of you. Okay, the next item we have on our agenda is public comment period. This is the time that the public can speak on items not on the agenda. And if you would be so kind as to fill out speaker cards, they are available in the back of the room, and some are on the... Oh, we have one more presentation. Very sorry. Is Pat here?
Yeah, back there. Pat ended his career with the City of Pismo Beach Public Works Department in the water crew. And he is extremely well-liked by all of us, all the people that work with him, and I'm sure by the community as well. And he's well-liked and well-admired and respected. So this is very nice, and thank you very much for the nice plaque. I'll be sure he gets it, and I'll be sure that I let him know the nice things that you said about him. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, now we're at public comment period. And as I indicated, I would appreciate if you would fill out the speaker cards that are available in the back of the room and at the podium. And the first card I have is Art Anthony.
Madam Mayor, Council Members, Art Anthony, I live on Coral Court. First, I'd like to request that Agenda Item 4J, that's in Juliet 4J, be removed from the consent calendar for discussion under Item 10. 4J.
4J, okay.
Second thing I'd like to talk about is Pismo Creek at this time of the year. I've spoken of this in summers past. It has that beautiful green tinge to it now as the algae bloom is in full effect. It's all the way from below Pismo Coast Village near the creek mouth up as far as we can see where it's obscured by foliage near our new sewage treatment plant. That is a condition which is known as eutrophication, caused by really a lack of oxygen in the water because the creek is not flowing. I've said before, and I still believe, this is a health hazard to those who live near the creek. I know it is a hazard to birds who rely on the creek water for food and other things. For some, it's a plus. They eat the algae, but for others, it may not be. And I say once again, I hope that someone here, because it's in our city, and I know there are a multiplicity of agencies responsible for the creek, but it's in our city. I think the city of Pismo Beach should be the lead agency in studying this issue. It happens every year, and it lasts until the creek starts flowing again. It's very unsightly, and it doesn't smell very good either, even if it's not a health hazard. So that's my concern. Thank you very much.
Thank you for bringing it to our attention. I'm sure the staff has heard the comments. Okay. The next card I have is Jeannie Gotti.
Madam Mayor and council members,
my name is Jeannie Gotti. I live over at 74 The Bluffs Drive, and I'm the president of the Homeowners Association.
In March
of 2005, we received a letter from Chief Lewin. The city had received a citizen complaint about property owners who were encroaching onto the open space and fire access easement located on property owned by the Bluffs of San Luis Bay Homeowners Association. The purpose of the easement is to provide a defensible space fuel break from the approaching wildfire. We've had several correspondence with the fire department, and in November 2005, we sent a letter to the El Portal homeowners since there was no response indicating any willingness on the part of CDF to work with the Homeowner Association Board to contact the homeowners to resolve this problem. We ask that they remove any fence, structure, or landscaping that is encroaching on our property. We ask that they relocate it inside their property line by December 2005 and that a crew could be scheduled to complete the removal of any overgrown vegetation. On November 21st, 2005, I met with Kevin Rice to discuss this issue and to discuss the removal of any overgrown vegetation. He said that he had advised his man at CDF not to get involved with this dispute with the homeowners on El Portal or the Bluffs Board of Directors. He did promise that he would have the fire chief remove the overgrown vegetation before the next fire season. In February 2006, I was informed by the city attorney that if it were a danger, the city would get involved, but that he felt that it was just a dispute between neighbors. He suggested that we should consult legal counsel about how to settle this dispute. In March 2006, we sent a packet to the mayor and to all the city council members. This packet contained all the correspondence that we had had with CDF, Kevin Rice, and David Fleischman. As of date, CDF has done more than an excellent job of weed abatement. The homeowner, who was red tagged for having no permit and has an 8-foot fence.
I have a card here from Don Day. Did you have public comment?
Sure. Don Day, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. Madam Mayor, members of the council. I would like to say congratulations to the community, to Just Cruising, and as far as we, probably the best car show we've ever had. It was a wonderful chaos, if you want to call it that, perhaps. Most of the businesses that I've talked to have had the best day ever financially. City Cruise, John Garrett, Tom Hembry, Jeff Heiser, and their associated crews did an outstanding job keeping the trash up and off the streets as best they could. 100 cubic yards of trash was accumulated during the three-day event. That's as big as the Fourth has ever been. I asked John, what's he do, measure it so he can keep track of it, but he said it was a 100-yard container. Fire and police, of course, were out there as well doing their jobs. All in all, from what I can gather, it went off quite well. There were very few arrests. A couple people were feeling their oats, perhaps, and had to be restrained. But in general, it went well. Rick Turton hopefully will be here soon to talk to you about the other side of the coin, which is next year and future years, because there's going to be some severe changes as to how the event can be put on if we lose the Benson lot. And hopefully he'll show up before the end of public session so that that can be discussed. But he gave me the easy part. I get to be complimentary. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next speaker's card I have is Effie McDermott, and I think she's going to give us a little history of the oil pipelines. And I told her I'd let her go a little bit over.
Is going to be considering some items relative to the oil pipelines in the city in the near future. So I wanted to introduce you to, as soon as it comes up on the screen,
it's on the consent calendar to set a public hearing date.
I think she's five. There she is.
Okay.
Okay. I want to introduce you to Old Mod.
Can you just begin now with the timekeeping? Okay.
On December 2nd, 1904, they had been drilling for about, working on this well for about 6 months in Santa Maria in the Hartnell field. And they felt the rumbling deep in the earth. Soon they heard the roar. The oil shot out the top of this well. The oil and gas shot up 150 feet into the air. It was, at that time, the biggest oil production well in the world. It ran down the gullies. It ran down the creeks. They tried to make ponds. They tried to contain it. They made little lakes. They tried to cap it. When they tried to cap it, it came out through the gopher holes. It was unstoppable, and it flowed for 2 years before they were able to put a pump on it. And in that 2 years, it pumped 3 million barrels of oil. It was averaging 10 to 12,000 barrels of oil a day. Well, when Union Oil came in with this big gusher, they, of course, needed to get to Tidewater, and they were pumping it into the Pacific Coast Railway tanker cars at the tracks there, but that wasn't sufficient. So they hired Sandercock from San Luis Obispo to start two crews to get a pipeline to Port Harford as soon as possible. Well, as that pipeline began to proceed north to Pismo Beach, Union Oil realized that they were going to try to cross the tracks. And they hadn't worked out all the details, and your city attorney may appreciate this. They put armed guards at a little stone bridge in Pismo Beach and to make sure that all the legal work was done before that pipeline was permitted to cross the Southern Pacific right away. They proceeded. I've lost my program here. How do I click something else here? I don't know what to do.
Arrow down.
I'm not getting anything. I'll keep on with my story.
Okay.
They proceeded through town. I'm in Hewlett-Packard, just a slideshow. Here we go. Sorry about that. Green area there is the Lions Club. The old Pacific Coast Oil pipeline and later Union Oil, Santa Maria, Gas and Power, those pipelines went directly under what is now the Lions Club. They went up Dolliver to where Porter Street is now. They crossed under. They went under what is now the kitchen of the steamers. They crossed over, did a little jog on Harbor View, went over there under the main, our motel, under Motel Row there. And this beautiful picture shows a lovely pastoral Pismo village in about 1904. And that white structure there alongside the ravine is the oil well bridge, I mean the oil pipeline bridge, where it crossed going north to Port Harford. In 1906, construction was undertaken for a refinery at what is now Sunset Palisades. You see a wharf in this picture. You see a refinery. They were producing petroleum, gasoline. They were manufacturing their drums. They would take the oil in. They could process 8,000 gallons a day, 8,000 barrels a day. And they would process it, put it in the barrels, and out it would go right out to the wharf. Unfortunately, they were only able to do that for 2 weeks before their wharf was knocked out by a storm, and they ran into financial difficulty, and they began to fall into disrepair, and it was eventually abandoned. Meanwhile, this is a close-up of the distillery section of it, or at least boilers. That's what it looks like to me. Here's another view of it, and notice over on the right, there's a little village. There are several houses, cabins there, and one building that, if you can see it closely, it looks like the Alamo. That was Oilport, California. People were born in Oilport, California. People received their mail in Oilport, California. They had a doctor, they had a clinic, and they had homes and businesses. This is another view from El Portal. That line of tanks went along El Portal as the pipelines worked their way to Port Harford. And this is a picture taken in about 1940, and there's nothing left of Oilport except the remnants of the refinery, which if you look very carefully, you can see over there across the water on the on the left. These are the tanks at Avila. The tanks from Oilport were moved to Avila. And what is this man doing? This man is standing on the oil pipelines that went under what would now be the Cypress Street Bridge. There was a big storm in 1909, and everything washed out, and this man is Virgil Hodges. He was a local photographer, and he took that opportunity to photograph the exposed oil pipelines as they traversed through the city of Pismo Beach. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was very interesting.
Very nice. Thank you.
Okay. I have no other speaker cards. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to an item not on the agenda?
Okay. I've mentioned on my card there, it says public speaking up at the top. I wasn't going to come today. Good afternoon, Council. I, too, am glad about this nice weather. I was outside pounding nails and cutting and stuff like them, kind of bush. But
you want to give us your name and address?
Bruce McFarland, 331 Park Avenue. But, again, and I'm glad the chief is here, and I'm glad one of the commanders are here, too, because, again, we have the issues of the bikes parked out on Hine Street in front of the bicycle rental place of a city councilman. The residents, the shop is identified as a city councilman. There's a sign up saying running for mayor. There's also a sign that says no parking in red. Okay. Now it's been continually. I phoned at 4:10 this afternoon, and a motorcycle officer went down there. How much do we have to waste when people can't read signs and stuff? And for someone that's running for higher office that can't obey simple rules,
is just beyond me. Just beyond me. Every day you walk out there, no parking. No parking. Red. And I would ask that other residents of the cities, our residents, that whenever they see this clear violation of the law, phone 773-2208. Don't phone 911. This is not a pressing issue. But I don't know how many times it has to happen down there until a citation is written out, a ticket. A couple days ago, the councilman's car was parked in the red zone going the wrong way on the street. So that was really crazy. But I'm not throwing stuff up at their speakers and stuff, so a little common courtesy would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to an item that's not on the agenda?
Yeah, I turned in a card that says item 2, I believe. I'm Ted Ehring. I live at 113 El Portal in Oil Port, California, at the site of a big oil tank. Madam Mayor and City Council members, I've been a planning commissioner for 6 of the last 8 years, and there seems to be a growing concern developing in the community, according to the press, that we're lost. Well, I'm here to tell you that I'm a geologist and I'm not lost. I know where I'm going and I know where we're headed. And I would like to call to the attention of the public and to the council, if they have forgotten, that the city council failed to approve in 1996 a Pismo Beach downtown specific plan that was developed by the planning commission and the planning department and submitted to the council. That's a bad thing that it didn't get approved, but almost 90% of that material has been incorporated within the 1998 ordinances and codes within the city. And so I'm just calling that to your attention trying to emphasize the fact that we're not lost. We might have some things that need to be redeveloped and tweaked a little bit, but we're certainly not lost. The second item that I have is, I don't know if you're aware of it, but at the Cliffs Hotel, there's a parking structure across the street from that hotel. And I noticed during the holiday here and that a lot of people just walk right across the street. It's a very, very poor situation. And sooner or later, somebody's going to get killed there. And it happens also at night when it gets a little dark or it's hard to see or when you're driving west, the sun's in your eyes. I would suggest that we study that, at least take a look at it, and see if we couldn't put a crosswalk and perhaps some signs that pedestrians will be crossing there, because they certainly don't come down to the corner of Spyglass to cross, nor do they go up to the next street and try to cross, but they cross directly in front of the hotel and go across the street to that parking lot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Staff has heard your remarks, so maybe they can take a look at that. I've noticed it, too, when I've walked down or driven down that street. I have no other cards. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to an item that's not on the agenda?
Is it appropriate to talk about the consent item that was pulled earlier right now, the item 4L? Is it appropriate to talk about the consent item that was pulled?
That's been moved to July 18th, right. So I would appreciate if you would just wait until that meeting.
I had some comments I'd like to enter into the record about that resolution that was provided, if that's possible.
Could you, City Attorney, give me an
Well, Madam Mayor, since the matter is no longer on the agenda, it seems like this would be like any other matter that's not on the agenda. It might be appropriate to take comment at this point and also allow him the opportunity on that time to speak to the resolution when it does come up.
Because it's public comment and it's not on the agenda.
Correct.
Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Robert Maloney. I live at 990 San Luis Avenue, and I'm representing the property owners at 990 Dolliver. So going back, this is regarding consent item 4L, the resolution upholding the appeal of the Planning Commission. And what I wanted to bring up, just a couple minor things, I was hoping that Council Member Higginbotham's request to have a letter provided from HCD on the density rounding. She specifically asked about trying to get something in writing from the state to substantiate staff's comments. And in the current staff report, it's not indicated that was done, and it indicates that they're staff may be falling back on the lack of a rounding up specification in the current ordinance. So we're hoping that we could get that taken care of. I've actually called HCD, and they're supposed to get us something in writing about that in the next, hopefully, week. Secondly, I was also hoping that the resolution could talk to affordable housing. I thought that that was something that came up at the City Council that seemed to be important to a few of the members.
Not on the agenda. Sorry, you had your turn. Okay, seeing none, we'll come back to the council. The next item on the agenda is City Council comments and requests. Does anyone have any comments or any requests?
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
If I may.
Councilman.
I would just also like to tote our public works staff during this car show. I mean, it was magnificent. Those people worked so hard. The trash cans were emptied on a regular basis. In years past, people complained every once in a while, you know, because some of the, you know, the Cokes and whatever would drip. But, boy, they didn't have a chance this time. The everything was clean. It was immaculate. And one of the other things, you know, there has something to do with seniority. And because the employees like working in Pismo Beach so much, I have found that they have taken on a real public attitude. You know, these people are friendly. They thank the people for putting the trash in the trash cans. It is much more than just somebody going to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, getting off at 6 or 7 o'clock that night. These employees really excel in their position, so I want to thank them all for that. The other thing that I'd like to answer is one of the, as many of you know, my big issues within the city of Pismo Beach is water and sewer. For some reason, I've really gravitated towards them. And at one of my last water meetings that I was down south, I presented Dennis with a circulation system referencing the algae blooms in Pismo Creek. Have we put that on a back burner, or I don't remember where that's gone, and that's all I have, Madam Mayor. Thank you.
That was a system that would circulate the water, and I met with the representative, got some cost estimates, and we do have the mid-year budget coming up, and if that's something you'd like to have on the mid-year budget, that would be the appropriate time to put that on the list and bring it up that time and discuss the merits of that option.
Would you do that for me, Kevin? The city manager, Dennis, city manager has contacted us all in wanting specific budget items for consideration, and if you'd see that gets on for me?
Sure.
Thank
I've
you.
Got the background material.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Delzite. Is there anyone else that has any comments? Mayor Pro Tem?
I just wanted to comment on item 4L that was pulled, that I didn't have to step down. I chose to step down from that item. Just I wanted to clarify that. And then also, I too wanted to talk about the city staff at the car show this weekend. They were everywhere. And someone mentioned three of them, and I thought, my goodness, they were just everywhere. Supervisors, weren't telling people what to do. They were picking up the garbage themselves, and just it was just wonderful. And then Les Davidson, he actually turned this car show into a Pismo Beach auto extravaganza. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable, the amount of people, the amount of cars, how professional, and he truly did raise the bar, and I think this council went in the right direction by choosing them. So that's all I have, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. I would have to agree with the comments by the rest of the council. I think the staff did a great job downtown, so we really appreciate that. We have our supervisor out there, so tell them all we appreciate it. But the car show did go above and beyond. I think it was a good decision on our part if we want to pat ourselves on the back.
Well, not all of us.
That's true. That's true. And I really don't have anything else this evening. Thank you.
Can I say something, Madam Mayor?
You sure can.
Of course. I had to miss the car show. I went down to watch my grandson graduate from UCLA, and it was quite a session down there. And I heard about the car show. When I came back, I got many, many phone calls. Boy, you guys did the right thing. You got the right promoter in there. I said, well, we had to do something to get this thing going. And boy, everybody loved that car show. I hear about it everywhere I go. So I want to also congratulate the efforts of our staff. I've heard a lot about them, too. And I think, Bill, you said it, you hit it on the nose when you said the courtesy that's displayed by the employees of our city to the outsiders that come in here, it's always been commented on. I hear this a lot when I'm down on Price Street helping out at the hardware store once in a while, and they... Every comment I get is positive comments about our city staff. So we do have probably one of the best city staffs in the area, or in this part of California.
George Eads, our Administrative Services Director, for a council presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bloom, Mayor and Council. Just very quickly on this item, which is simply a resolution of intention to take an act, i.e. to hold a public hearing and for possible consideration of an ordinance for a franchise fee or for a franchise agreement with ConocoPhillips in an existing pipeline that was described in an earlier presentation, been under the city in some ways since back in the 50s or earlier. And the primary purpose of this ordinance is to bring us up in line with physical realities and with provisions in the state code, and to which, among other things, allow describe the franchise fees that the city could get for this, which would increase the city's revenues by approximately $7,000. As information, this staff report has been provided to representatives of ConocoPhillips, and they've commented that the one comment they had was ConocoPhillips is one word with two capital letters, the first C and the first P. And so otherwise they had no comments or questions on this. They do intend to attend the July 18 public hearing.
Okay, thank you very much. Does any of the council have any questions of staff on this item?
You know, I just had one question for Mr. Delzai.
Mayor Pro Tem.
On 6A, page 2, it talked about repairs and renew. So who would enforce that and watch over the repairs?
The city engineering department would issue an encroachment permit for any repairs that would occur within the public right-of-way. And we would look for such things to be sure that the traffic detours were properly set up, that the backfilling of the trenches were done properly so they wouldn't result in future settlement, things of that nature.
And then would they report periodically to you as well?
Well, the encroachment permit would be good for the period of time that they're doing any repair, and so we would... have the opportunity to review and inspect the work while it's going on up until the time that the work is completed. and it would have to be completed to our satisfaction.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Thalzak. That's all I have, Madam Mayor.
Okay, is there any other questions from the council? Seeing none, I will go to the public. Is there anyone in the public that would like to comment on this item 6A? Seeing none, I'll come back to the council and entertain a motion.
Well, Madam Mayor, I have some questions on this, if I may. Is the pipeline carrying anything now?
No, it's not in use now, and it's in suspended stage of activity.
Is it whole?
Our understanding from discussions we had with the pipeline company a few years ago is yes, that that the pipeline is sound and it's in good condition.
This is the reason that I'm asking the question. I don't want to enter into a franchise agreement with ConocoPhillips. I want to take possession of that pipeline, and let me tell you why. Diablo Canyon has the largest desalinization plant on the west coast of California. Our sister cities, Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, are in dire need of water. They are about 97-98% of their capacity. If the city of Pismo Beach could take possession of that pipeline, clean it or sleeve it, and we could then, in fact, I'm going to be meeting with a representative of PG&E on this very issue within the next couple of weeks, then what we could do is we could not only provide additional water, if necessary, to the city of Pismo Beach, but then I believe that we could also provide a very distinct connection to our sister cities who are in need and who are at this point in time discussing the construction of a desalinization plant on the beach at Grover Beach, which has got very difficult environmental regulations associated with it. And the last estimate that I have heard is it would take 20 to 25 years to get a desal plant built, if at all. So $1,000 a year in income, which is minuscule in my estimation, compared to the long-term benefit of South County. So I'd like staff to take a look at that, and I hope that I have some support from my council members as well.
Well, Mr. Delzide, I had asked the city manager about those pipes, and he indicated that the ConocoPhillips had said that the pipes are not usable, that they're just not in a condition to be used.
Hmm. Okay, so maybe well, I'm going he didn't off share of that conversations with you. We had a couple of years ago, so I haven't talked with the city manager about this new information, so apparently there's a difference between information that he's heard about the pipelines and the information that I heard a couple of years ago.
Okay. Mr. Bloom, did you have any conversation with the city manager about the pipelines at all?
No, I didn't on this one.
Well, I guess I would ask if there is a date that this needs to be done, if we could postpone it, just because there has been some questions asked. That we could get some answers to?
Well, what we're asking tonight is just for a resolution setting the public hearing for July 18th. Between now and then, we can certainly obtain that information.
Okay.
And if at the public hearing we determine that there are other information that you can make that decision about the franchise on, we can certainly provide it at that time. This is just the initial step under the Public Utilities Code to grant the franchise. It is not the granting of the franchise tonight.
But that is our next council meeting.
That's correct.
We're not having a July 4th.
Yeah, a month
4th.
from about now. Mm-hmm.
Okay. With that, and there was no further public comment, I will come back to the council and ask what their wishes are. I believe that this is probably in order at this point, and then on July 18th there will be a public hearing, and I think that we'll have some further information. Yeah.
So we could actually go ahead and approve and adopt a resolution of intention. That's all this is. So then we'll talk about it between now and then. We'll be able to get some information.
I'll second that, Rudy.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve this item, the resolution.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes 4-0-1. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is item 6B, and this is a presentation by Larry Allen of the Air Pollution Control District.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Council. My name is Larry Allen. I'm the Director of the Air Pollution Control District, and I'm here tonight at the direction of our board to try and provide some information about the effects of climate change and what our board has directed the Air District to do on its behalf to try and begin addressing that issue. And let's see if this works. Hey, Steve. Give me a little lesson here.
Seems like we're having a lot of technical difficulties tonight.
At some point in time, technology goes beyond some people's ability.
Oh, I see.
Could you give me some more coffee? Just a little tiny bit. Two fingers. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Whoops. Something happened there.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, that's backwards. Okay, I got you. All right. Thanks.
Okay.
I've got it.
You
thank
ready?
You.
Okay. Thank you.
Just a slight background. The greenhouse effect is really what causes global warming or climate change, and it's a natural phenomenon. Sunlight enters the Earth's atmosphere in the form of ultraviolet radiation. About 30% of that gets reflected off the upper atmosphere and projected back into space, and the rest of it comes down and warms the surface of the Earth and the ocean and so forth. And as the Earth and the ocean cools, it gets released back out as infrared radiation, which is much longer wavelength than UV. Some of that goes back out and penetrates the atmosphere and goes back out to space, and a portion of it is captured by naturally occurring greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and gets re-radiated back down to Earth or stays in the lower atmosphere and warms it. And that greenhouse effect is really the reason why Earth is, you know, has an average temperature and a very habitable temperature of 60 degrees Fahrenheit. If it didn't have that effect, it'd be about 5 degrees throughout the Earth, and it would not be a habitable place. So natural greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide, methane, and water vapor are what cause this effect. And for millions of years, they've been in balance, about 385 parts per million, a bit more than is in this slide, which is about 2 years old. They're at their highest levels in over 430,000 years. Worldwide, about 26 billion tons are put into the atmosphere of carbon dioxide each year. About 75% of that is from fossil fuel combustion. The other 25% is from land use changes, cutting down of forests and paving of green areas with, urban development. The United States is the single largest contributor of greenhouse gas emissions. We contribute about 25% of those emissions, even though we only have 5% of the population in the world. And globally, the rise in carbon dioxide levels has closely followed an observed rise in temperature. Global temperatures have risen about 1 degree Fahrenheit over the past 100 years. Most of that has occurred over the last 50 years. 9 of the 10 hottest years on record have occurred in the last decade. And the interesting thing about this increase in temperature is that the nighttime daily minimum temperatures are increasing twice as fast as daytime maximum temperatures, which means that you're not getting the cool down at night that you used to get to the same level. So the rate of warming is really quite rapid, and impacts are occurring now. Many of you may have seen Time Magazine's cover that came out about a month ago. And they devoted an entire issue to that. Newsweek followed with quite a significant article as well. There is, I think, over the years, there's been an attempt to portray climate change as a debate, when in fact, Science Magazine, Science Journal reviewed, peer-reviewed over 1,000 articles over the last few years, and have found no dispute among any of those articles in terms of what's happening globally with climate change. In terms of impacts that are occurring, human health impacts, there was a heat wave in France a few years ago, killed almost 20,000 people, caused $4 billion in damage to their agricultural industry. There were flooding the year before in the city of Dresden, required evacuation of most of the city, including all of their hospitals, increased exposure to diseases, toxic substances in the water. From the standpoint of economic impacts, this is there's a lot of data on this related to extreme weather events. It's interesting that the insurance industry is the single largest proponent for measures to reduce greenhouse gases, because they are literally getting hammered, and a lot of them are going bankrupt as a result of the payouts from all of the extreme weather events that have occurred. Economic losses per decade have increased about 12-fold since 1950, from $4 billion to almost $50 billion per year on average, with some years much larger. This chart that you see doesn't include last year, with 32 hurricanes and Katrina being one of those. You've all read about glaciers receding. The pictures on the right are of Glacier National Park. The one on the top was taken, I believe, in 1911, and the one on the bottom was taken in 2001, I believe. Global warming is hitting the Arctic twice as fast as the rest of the planet. We have, since 1979, have lost over 20% of the Arctic ice sheet. Snow melt is declining throughout the world, and water quantity and quality issues are also a big concern as a result of that. Spring runoff has decreased by over 10% over the past century. The Sierra Nevada snowpack is the largest reservoir for California's water. We had a very good snow year this year, but that is not anticipated to continue over the long term. And they are seeing a faster, an earlier snow melt of already over a week earlier right now, which can start leading to floods as it comes faster than we have expected in the past. And if the rain-to-snow ratio starts increasing significantly, then we will lose that snowpack reservoir. Sea levels are rising globally about 48 inches over the past 4 to 8 inches over the past 100 years, which is quite a bit faster than has occurred over the past 3,000 years. In California, we've seen a 7-inch rise since 1850. Higher rises in the United States. 3-day heat waves are expected to increase anywhere from 5 to 10 times what they are right now, which is a significant public health threat. Melting of the glaciers will accelerate, and a host of other significant impacts. In California, if we do everything that we can and are expected to reach about 540 parts per million carbon dioxide, we'll still see a temperature increase of about 3 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit, probably 30 to 60% loss of the snowpack in the Sierra, a fairly significant rise, maybe a foot in sea level, and maybe 2 to 2.5 times as many heat wave days in major urban centers, and along with a lot of other impacts. I won't go through all of them. If we don't start taking action now and we see a higher increase in carbon dioxide, we could see up to 10 degrees warming in California, 90% loss of our snowpack. So you were talking about water needs in our area. That's going to be a critical concern if we don't do something fairly soon. Because of this, there are a lot of there's a lot of concern globally, internationally, about this, and there's a lot of action that has been taken. At the international level, they finally adopted the Kyoto Protocol emission targets, which are really just a start to get people moving. There's a lot of there's 141 nations that have signed on to that, and they're moving as aggressively as they can. At the national level, there has not been any action by our federal government on this right now, other than to adopt some voluntary type programs, which really aren't and provide some incentives for emission reductions, but that hasn't really moved us very far down the road. At the state level, California has Governor Schwarzenegger has adopted the most aggressive emission reduction goals in the world, and those are that we would reduce emissions of greenhouse gases to 1990 levels by the year 2020, and that we would be 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. That's going to take a lot to reach those, and the state has adopted, there's a climate action team that was put together of all the top heads of all the departments in the California Resources Agencies, and they've developed a plan to try and deal with that. Other states, 40 other states already have local programs to try and address this. And at the local level, there's the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement that a lot of cities in the United States have signed on to. There's also the Cities for Climate Protection program, which I'll talk about in a second. And then there's some local air districts have already also adopted some programs. Ours is one of those. And what our board did was directed us to start with developing a countywide inventory of greenhouse gas emissions, to target a percentage of our mitigation grant funds, that those that are discretionary at least, for reducing greenhouse gases from projects that are brought to us. We haven't determined yet what that percentage is. We're to quantify the benefits in greenhouse gas reductions from our existing programs to see where we can tweak those to even do better, work on public education and outreach programs, encourage local governments to get involved, and that's why I'm here tonight. And there's a number, there's a few things that I would like to recommend for the cities. And the first is to sign on to the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement, which was proposed by Seattle Mayor Nichols in June of 2005. That says 219 mayors have signed on. There's actually now almost 240 mayors have signed on, and this slide was prepared just a few months ago, representing over 44 million people. And it would commit the city to three different actions. The first one is that you would strive to meet or beat the Kyoto Protocol targets in your community through actions that you would take locally. And that would be to try and see a 7% reduction from 1990 levels by the year 2012. Now, that's rapidly approaching, but there is a lot that can be done. The second action is to urge state and federal governments to enact policies and programs to meet or beat the Kyoto Protocol target of 7%. And then the third would be to urge the U.S. Congress to pass reduction greenhouse gas reduction legislation to establish a national emissions trading system. And so that's one step that year, say 2015 or so. And then you would adopt an emission reduction target for the forecast year based on what you thought that you could achieve. The third thing would then be to develop a local action plan on how you would achieve it. That would provide a timeline and commit some staffing resources and financial resources to moving towards that goal, and providing also for a public awareness and outreach campaign, because it's critical that you get your local public involved in doing what they can. And then the fourth one milestone would be to implement those policies and measures, and then finally to monitor your progress and to adjust as appropriate. And this program, it sounds fairly aggressive. There are tools available to help you in calculating your baseline of forecast emissions and for the reductions that looking at calculating the reductions that you might achieve. ICLEI has some software tools available. They provide training for a cost of about $650. I believe the city can join ICLEI, join the program. They will provide you with the software, train your staff how to use it. Our staff is being trained as well, and we can help you in calculating emissions and developing a plan that works for you. So our recommendation is that you would commit to adopting the U.S. Mayor's Agreement for Climate Protection and or the Cities for Climate Protection Program, and that you would direct your staff to work with our staff and with community partners that you would have to bring back some program options to your council over the next several months. And there's just, you were given a handout, I believe, of these slides, and so the last page has some program assistance information on it. And that concludes my presentation, if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions of Mr. Allen?
Madam Mayor, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Remmer.
What a wonderful presentation. And one of the things with council's permission that I would like to ask is that this be run with his voice on Channel 20 throughout the month. AGP video, I'd like to request that you run this presentation with audio on Channel 21, the government channel. And then and then just a quick comment. You know, some people, at least one person, accuses me of babbling. And, you know, I try not to babble. I think I've learned my lesson. I'm also getting tired of seeing my face in the newspaper. But I do read a lot. I study a lot. And I've read and studied a lot about this issue. And I work with Caltrans on regular basis. I'm either talking about trains or I'm talking about trying to reduce pollution in many different arenas. But one meeting that I went to, and you look familiar, and I don't know if you were there or not, was the new program that the Caltrans at the state level is coming up with to try to talk about our infrastructure and our new road systems and all of that. What came and struck me most in my mind out of that whole presentation was the ports, Los Angeles, San Pedro. They're now, Port Hueneme is almost becoming an exclusive port for automobiles. And when they put the pollution diagrams up on the screen, it was absolutely appalling to see the concentration and the tonnage of these pollutants that are coming into the air from these port cities, because you've not only got the ships that are running very crude diesel oil, you've also got the trucks that are coming in to pick them up, you've also got the cars that live in those concentrated areas, and then you combine that with the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream goes west to east, and what happens is we take these large concentrations of this unpalatable gunk that's going into the air, and we're spreading it across the entire United States. Now, legislatively speaking, federally and state, something needs to be done at these major pollution ports. And yes, we can do, and we should do, and I'm hoping the mayor is going to ask for direction from the council to go ahead and sign these agreements. I agree with that totally. But I also agree that there must be something done at these extreme locations that probably put more into the air daily than we contribute a year. It was a fine presentation. I thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Can I just offer one brief comment, and that is that I don't know if you're familiar with the Goods Movement Action Plan that is currently being developed and about to be adopted.
Dealers and the trunk companies will be able to advertise their use on our lovely beaches, and we will not be putting gunk out there in our air as they patrol around. Large cities do it. We might have a problem since we're dealing with the state, and the state might have some weird little bylaw that say you can't do it, but I believe it's worth a try. Plus, it will save us money. It is free vehicles are fun, especially if they're not polluting. Okay, another idea is, since we have the pollution gentleman here, is the state has, the coffers are opening up a little bit right now. Is it possible, there's no way we can stop cars driving around in our downtown area. But is it possible, is there any grant money possible to help us with developing our proposed underground parking structure? We're going to be losing 600 or so spots when Benson gets constructed. We have a chance to have tie-in there with their underground parking. If people can't find parking, they just drive around and around and around and around until somebody leaves. You know, I'm not the brightest guy. That is pollution. If you have parking, if we can get a grant, if we can help this process move along, I believe it's worth trying to see if there's any money in the state or the pollution district. That is definitely would be good money to get pollution out, to have people park. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, I'm going to come back to the council. This is not an action item, so I would ask that it appears that we want to have some further discussion on this, that it be put on a future agenda.
Okay.
I concur, Madam Mayor.
Okay. We have consensus. Does the rest of the council feel the same? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Allen. That was a wonderful presentation.
Thanks. Well, how about if we just do this next item first? Yeah.
What's the next item?
Okay. The council's asked for a short break. It's about 7 till. We will break till 6 o'clock.
You had a bunch of questions for him, but you just switched it to the next meeting. Will he be here? I said I'd like to ask.
I'm going to defer to Councilman Natoli on this.
Sure.
Unless you want the city manager to present it.
Go ahead. No, it's... You can take care of it if you'd like.
Okay, this is an addendum to our adopted ethics code. We did adopt an ethics code for our city, and most of the cities in the Channel Counties division... There's 25 of them, and right now there's 20 that already have adopted codes. And they're using basically the code that I developed for Pismo Beach. And one of these cities called me and said, you know, the code is excellent. However, I think you should have a sign-off sheet. I said, fax me what you got or just send me something that you have, and it'll be your addition to the code of ethics. So... What you see before you, or what we have before us here on item 6C, is a statement of commitment, and that is to ensure that whoever comes on board, whether they're elected or whether they're appointed to any of our boards or commissions, they will be given a code to read, and they're going to read it so they can understand it. And this is a sign-off sheet so that they have read it, they understand it, and they agree to abide by the rules on that code of ethics. So this will be our addendum to that code of ethics, which you've already passed. So I'll open it up for comments to the council.
Okay. Is there any of the council would like to ask Rudy a question about this, or Councilman?
No. I'd really like to commend Rudy. You know, I've probably been one of the biggest at fault on this city council over the past 6 months or so in not respecting my feelings and presenting my feelings maybe the way that they should have been represented. I wish that everybody would have a chance to read this because of Rudy's hard work and the development of that code of ethics, and from some of you, quite frankly, getting in my face and saying, Bill, what's the matter with you? I've tried to turn a corner, which I believe that I've done. This is not only important, it is the right thing to do, and it's just
good.
The only thing that I would do is maybe you could call one of the district governors or something and say that we're so enamored with that, because it needs to be in there. And yeah, oh, and it absolutely
right.
needs to be in there. And if they don't like it, then we can certainly paraphrase
okay.
and do it on our own. But that's what I'd do.
Okay. Actually, I just asked Councilman Natoli if he would just acknowledge the fact that that was the four-way test from the Rotary. And I don't believe the Rotary would object to this being used because it is something that they want out there. And as long as it's acknowledged that it is something that Rotary does abide by and recommends. So I wouldn't have any objection to it, but we can go out to the public and...
Okay, I you know, it's always nice to ask permission, you know, and give them credit for what they've developed. So that's just my feeling.
Okay.
I did take the liberty to call somebody from Rotary, and so, yeah. So
good.
It is okay. It is something that they yeah. use... on an ongoing basis. It is the four-way test, and they indicated that they'd be proud if we used it. So,
good. Thank you for doing that.
Okay, you're very welcome. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this item? This is item 6C, and I do have at least one card. Teddy Ray.
Yes, my comment is I'm Ted Ehring, living in Pismo Beach. As you know, I called your attention to this Oak Code of Ethics one time in the past. And one of the things it's really in the form of a question, Rudy. Is this just a sign-up sheet that each council member in the future or will add to the original Code of Ethics that you developed in the before?
Right. It'll
okay.
be the final sheet that goes with the packet, and then they'll read it, and then they have to sign it after they read it. And
yeah, because it did not seem as inclusive,
right.
and it wasn't presented in the package from
right.
From the city manager.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Good comment.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this item?
Madam Mayor, Council Members, Art Anthony, I live on Coral Court. I think it might be valuable for those who are watching this program on television and listening to it to hear part of this, so I'll read as much as I can in my 3 minutes.
Okay.
This is a statement of commitment. As a member of the Pismo Beach City Council or as a member of a Pismo Beach Advisory Board, I agree to uphold the Code of Ethics for elected and appointed officials adopted by the City Council and conduct myself by the following model of behavior. I will... recognize the worth of individual members and appreciate their individual talents, perspective, and contributions. I will help create an atmosphere of respect and civility where individual members, city staff, and the public are free to express their ideas and work to their full potential. I will conduct my personal and public affairs with honesty, integrity, fairness, and respect for others. I will keep the common good as my highest purpose and focus on achieving constructive solutions for the public benefit. I think I left one out. I will respect
yeah.
the dignity and privacy of individuals and organizations. I will avoid and discourage conduct which is divisive or harmful to the best interests of Pismo Beach. I will treat all people with whom I come in contact in the way I wish to be treated. Parenthetically, that sounds like the golden rule. I will, before I speak or act, I will ask myself the following four questions. Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? Will it be beneficial to all concerned? And then there's an affirmation I've read and understand it, signed by the person. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item?
Bruce McFarland. There's a couple questions for Rudy. On the Code of Ethics there, is there anything about obeying all federal, state, and local laws?
Actually, I don't have that right in front of me, but it's to obey all the laws that are applicable on our our ordinances and our we didn't mention state or federal.
Well, okay, so that means
this is for the job that you're doing here.
Okay, so that's really a local thing, like obeying no parking in a red zone. Then.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to know what the fines or the punishment is for when somebody is in violation of these things. Is there what you get censored here or what?
This is merely a guide for all the employees. I don't want to comment on what you're specifically leading up to.
No, just
it's not my place.
You mean if they're not followed?
Yeah, if they're not followed.
Well, it is up to the council. They can sanction a member.
Okay.
If they don't abide, it's up to the council. It would have to be a majority of the council that would.
Okay.
There is no staff report, and staff is looking for direction from the council through their discussion. And at this point, it's appropriate to turn it over to Councilman Ravenal to.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, discussion. Councilman Ravenal. Do you want to present why you put this on the agenda?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. This is potentially a very important issue for our downtown. We've seen in recent months that development projects are coming forward only to be appealed. I have been told by members of the public that any development in the downtown core will continue to be appealed. It's not the way I want to run a community. You know, if I were to get in my car and want to drive to New York, I would require a map. If I were, in fact, wanting to build a house, I would require an architect. We have no plan for our downtown core. You know, I don't know how we, as a local society, can move forward without a plan. I think it's fair to our residents. It's fair to the development community that wants to come in, so they'll understand the rules. They'll know what they are, in fact, looking to do. Moratorium, I think, is too harsh a word. I'd like to thank my new friend Bill for that. But I do want a timeout. I only want a 90-day timeout. But there's a caveat there. I will not support a timeout if, in fact, this council and the Planning Commission do not agree to meet on a regular basis during that 90-day period to come up with, if nothing else, a skeleton. A plan that we can move forward with. I have spoken with Randy Bloom. Randy says, we should, if the council agrees to go forward with this, is that we should, in fact, hire a specific plan consultant. I absolutely agree with that recommendation, and let me tell you why. There are some that have come to me and said, we got Cal Poly in the neighborhood, as an example. And they've got a great architectural department, and they have a planning department, and they have all of these things. But if we remember that these are classes, this is a learning atmosphere. And the best example that I can give you is if you've been following the newspaper, Cal Poly is looking to expand their campus and their operation. And they've gone out and hired someone to help them do that. So even though Cal Poly, I think, is a wonderful asset to the community, it is a learning institution. In my estimation, we've learned, but what we've learned is that we in fact do need a plan. I had a telephone call last night from an individual, and she said to me, she says, Bill, she says, you're provocative. Well, you know, I guess I'll accept that. But really, all that I look to do is to create or help create a thinking environment. I would like people to come together and understand the absolute need of this plan for the downtown community. It's imperative, and I'm looking forward for council support on this. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Does any of the council have questions of Councilman Rabineau?
Well, I don't have questions, but I have comments about it. I'm glad that Councilmember Rabineau stated that moratorium is awfully harsh. It's almost scary. And I, too, think that maybe cooling down on the building until we have a specific parking issue first. And also, I don't think it should be televised. I know staff had some concerns about it being an election year and having workshops. And I said, well, just don't televise it. Then no one can get on their soapbox. But be sure that all the public is notified, so anyone that has concerns with our parking and is interested in what's going on with our parking, that they would attend the workshop. I think that's the biggest issue. And I think once that's settled, then we can move in a direction with a specific plan. And if they're saying we already have some sort of specific plan, then I want to know why it's being ignored. So, I mean, it has to be one or the other. Either we do or we don't. And if we do, it's being ignored. And also, I think that that once we have the parking in place, then we can address the height issues and environmental, and that project should, in fact, have environmental reports with them, as some of the projects that are being a project that was appealed didn't have an environmental impact report in the beginning. And also, I spoke with several developers, and they told me they would like to see a moratorium. And I said, are you pulling my leg? I thought they were kidding me. And they said, no, because we do not want to have a project go before your planning commission, be appealed, and cost us money. We need to have good direction. So I think everyone that's involved with this really does want that. They want everything clear. Our planning commissioners, I mean, they voiced that they would like clearer direction. So I think we need to do that, but I think parking is paramount. And that's all I have at this time.
Thank you, Mayor Protem. Did you have anything, Councilman Natoli?
I actually feel that I should step down because this is an issue that I do have conflict of interest in anything they do down there.
If you'd like some personal advice on that.
That is your decision to make.
That's right.
And whatever you're comfortable with is...
I'm not comfortable the way it is right now, because I know what direction this is going.
Okay. Thank you. Then you're excused. The comments that I have so far, I think I would probably agree with Mayor Pro Tem that, you know, that parking issue is our biggest issue. I think our first joint meeting with Planning Commission did prove to be useful in that we established several things we were concerned about, the ratio of commercial to secondary use, and the parking, you know, was a big thing, the traffic circulation. There was lots of things, and whether we should, you know, have less mixed use or whether we should allow more commercial to go into the mixed use district. So and it's not that we don't have a plan. I don't agree with Councilman Rabineau on that. We have a plan. We have rules in place. So it's not that we're just willy-nilly approving things with no rules. There are rules. And the present plan that we have, the specific plan that did not get adopted, majority of that was placed within the zoning code and the general plan. So I don't agree that it's willy-nilly. I think that we're finding there's some things that maybe we want to make some changes in. So my suggestion would be is that we take the specific plan that we had so much public input on, that the Planning Commission at that time participated in, and also that the City Council participated in at that time, and distribute it to the Planning Commission and to the City Council and members of the public, and maybe have a workshop on it 4 weeks from now. Use that as a basis because there was a lot of input at that time. So with that, I'll go to the public. There are several people in the public that want to speak to this item. And the first one I have is Bruce McFarlane.
The other item that we just got finished speaking to, the Code of Ethics, Rudy has just abided by it. How can Councilman Rabinow bring this up, ask for a moratorium, when he has a bicycle shop rental in the core area? He's sitting on a piece of property there that's going to be developed, is in the process of development, or the process of plans. Have I been sitting here in a haze? Conflict of interest? Code of Ethics? But anyway, since obviously this is not... I guess the ink hasn't dried yet in the Code of Ethics, so everything's cool. I think everything is being just shut down while the city building in the downtown core is being shut down. Therefore, I say it's a conflict of interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next card I have is Don West.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Don West, 34 El Viento in Pismo Beach. And what do you call it, a moratorium or a timeout? They're usually imposed as a last-ditch effort in cases of emergency. And I believe there's no emergency exists here. There's a real need to prepare a specific plan for the core area, perhaps, but no emergency. Sufficient guidance and control exists in the general plan and land use ordinance and the recently adopted architectural guidelines that will serve the purpose for the city quite well until a specific plan is prepared. Implementing a moratorium would likely have an adverse effect on the economy of the community and place an unfair impact on downtown property owners. Penalizing the downtown property owners for the failure of the city to adopt a core area specific plan as required by the general plan in 1992 is simply not good leadership. As an example, one of my clients has a proposed mixed-use project on the fringe of the residential serving commercial district. We submitted an application in early April for a conceptual review and have yet to gain access to the Planning Commission agenda. The project has been removed from consideration from the agenda twice. First, due to the joint workshop between the Council and the Planning Commission, and secondly, due to this agenda item. It's a good, clean project. Meets all the land use conditions, ordinances, and zoning criteria. No requests for variances or special considerations. It even has underground parking. But we continue to be frustrated by the inability to enter the process. I urge you to accelerate preparation of a specific plan, and I'm confident that you can do it in a professional manner without all the drama. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The next card I have is from Don Day.
Good Don Day, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. Madam Mayor, members of the council, I concur with some of the things that I heard relative to the parking. I think it's the central critical issue that we have to resolve. I think parking will dictate how we might go with a general plan, or a specific plan, rather. It would dictate how we grow as we develop the downtown core, and maybe even the mixed use. Randy had alluded to in the past meeting that perhaps the downtown core is too small if we want to get a little bigger. What we do in the mixed use may also affect whether we could grow or not, because if the mixed use is too residential, we may not have the financial ability to grow outside the core that exists now currently for the commercial core. I would totally concur with the omission of TVs in the meeting. If we were to have a meeting, I would suggest that we have a somewhat informal basis, like we had perhaps with Chart the Course, where we could be on a more equal basis, if I can put it that way, so that there is a more ebb and flow or a give and take of information and opinions. I think if you look at San Luis, if I can use that as an example, San Luis started growing and developing recently once their parking issues were resolved as far as their parking structures. Copeland's is a prime example. Copeland's bit a big bullet, decided to make some negotiations with the city. There was exchange of city property for private property and vice versa, so that they could do block developments. And if you look at some of the things that Copeland's has done now downtown, it's pretty impressive. They have different conditions that exist in their community. It's a city with a large campus, so it has that population base. It's also the county seat, so there's a different need for parking in a sense, a more constant demand, whereas ours is a more seasonal demand. But nevertheless, I think parking is going to be a critical issue before we can go forward with some of the other aspects of our specific plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Drawing and buildings of the current downtown, and then have them do them with the three-story buildings, and they'll do that for you. I think there's a representative from Cal Poly here tonight that could probably do that for you. And then everyone can see exactly what the current downtown looks like and what the enhanced downtown would look like. And you really can't visualize it when you see each project come through on its own. You see one three-story building, well, that'll be okay, but you put 30 of them together and you got a problem. So you need to look at that. And I just don't know of anybody who would do anything without having that in place. Parking is a tremendous problem. And Councilman Gonzalez is completely correct. You need to do something with that first. No one can plan without it. I don't care what it is. I've been a builder, and the builders will wait. Because if they come and bring a project before you and get turned down and have to go back again and redraw it again, it just costs them thousands and thousands of dollars needlessly. You're better off to wait. We had a situation one time when I was in the Valley Building, a town called Madera. They had a little growth spurt. And, boy, they didn't know what to do. They said, bring all your plans and we'll accept anything. And as a member of the Building Industry Association at that time, we called the moratorium ourselves. We went to the city council and said, we need to stop because we need to know what you want us to do. You don't want us to shoot right, left, what? We need to know exactly what we could do. We don't want to waste our money, time, and energy. And that's what has to happen here. I mean, I think you need the camera's off. I think you need people sitting around a table, you and the Planning Commission, and hassling it out. And everyone talking for the length that they want to talk, and have somebody put all the ideas on a chart board just like they do in a meeting, and get the thing handled down. It's very important. This is the future. Things change all the time. They say, well, you've got a plan in place. Well, that's great, but that was 8 years ago. You know, prices have tripled since then. Everything has changed, and you always have to go to meet the change. And we haven't done that yet, and we need to. So please. I know it's tough. It's very tough to make that decision, moratorium. It'll be in the paper tomorrow. Pismo City Council calls a moratorium. I can just see it now. You know, and you're all going to say, oh, my God, what are we going to do now? It's all in the paper. Well, you're doing it for the benefit of the city.
Thank you. Your 3 minutes are up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tony Spinelli.
Tony Spinelli, Pismo Beach. With all due respect to Mr. Dutra, We have a plan in place. We have zoning ordinances, land use. We have a plan. Now, granted, it might need a little tweaking, but I think that what we're doing here is that we're looking for direction on what we'd want to do with this, quote, moratorium. And I'm with Mr. West. You know, we're not in an urgency situation. We have not developed anything major in this town since 1987. And for everybody to get up in an uproar right now, I've always said, and I sat here 2 weeks ago and stood before you and told you that we need to start looking at the parking. The parking is the crux to this whole situation. I look at Morro Bay when Morro Bay was going through their moratorium here a few years back. And now they're screaming for development in that downtown. We have issues here, yes. We have people that want to come out of the ground with projects, yes. But we can't stifle this downtown. I heard talk about mass and bulk. Well, if you want to stifle a downtown anywhere, then you get rid of the mass and the bulk. So I think what we need to do is the direction here. Granted, I think we need to start talking about our parking situation seriously. Not just talk about it. Let's put it on paper. That's where it all begins. What we're doing here is we're putting the cart before the horse. Thank you.
Thank you. The next card I have is Bill Sadek.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, good evening. My name is Bill Sadek, 37 La Gaviota. I think it's a wonderful thing to have a vision and a master plan for the downtown area, for the core downtown area, which basically consists of about four city blocks by the pier. I think it would be great to work together, have frequent meetings with the Planning Commission and citizens to develop a master plan. However, a master plan is serious business. It will affect our city for the next 50 to 100 years. If a moratorium is implemented, you will be expected to come up with a master plan in 45 days or 90 days or whatever the length of time it is. Of course, this would be unrealistic and totally reach a long time to attract money, business, and people who are willing to invest in our community in order to revitalize it. Now, the M word is threatening all of that. We would be telling these people, take your plans, take your money, and put it elsewhere, because you're not going to be secure here, because we are implementing a moratorium. If we do that and lose their trust, how long will it take us to regain it back again? In conclusion, a moratorium is not the best solution in this particular case. It will hurt our city and is perceived by some as an overkill measure. It's pretty much the same like there was a robbery downtown Pismo Beach last night and we're going to be implementing martial law. A building moratorium accomplishes nothing more than fleeting headlines in the newspapers that are soon forgotten by the general public, yet stays in the minds of investors and, most importantly, our business community. Make us proud. Vote no on the building moratorium. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I have a card from Art Anthony.
Madam Mayor, Council Members, Art Anthony, I live on Coral Court. I think it might be useful to understand why the preceding council, several councils back, did not approve the specific plan that was written after an awful lot of work and money went into it. As I understand it, it was primarily because the State Coastal Commission refused to sign off on the plan. It is within the local coastal area, so they have that authority. Because the City of Pismo Beach would not agree to prohibit seawalls throughout the city.
which included areas in the northern end of our town that need seawalls. That was the major reason. There were other political reasons because it came up at a time when an election was happening. If we enact a moratorium, the city attorney is going to tell you that certain findings must be written down. Why? During the moratorium, I ask what specifically is to be done, whatever the length of time. Who's going to do it? Consultants have been spoken of. If that's true, how much are they going to charge us? What city council policy direction specifically will be used to define the work product of consultants or staff? I think the effects of the moratorium on the city tax and fee income during the moratorium period has to be analyzed and cranked into our budget plans. If a specific plan is to be written, what plan elements are needed that are not now covered in the general plan and zoning ordinance? Commissioner Ehring told us in his opinion there are 90% of that specific plan's elements already in our general plan and zoning ordinance. That's my opinion, too. Parking study is underway. As I understand it, you spent $35,000 or something like that for the study that is now in process and should be being presented to you within about a month or so. I hope we'll have a lot of the questions that a lot of us have on parking at that time. The Benson development, which cannot be stopped now, it's vested, is going to have a tremendous influence on the core area. I think it would be a good idea to study what that influence is before we go jumping off into a stop everything mode. Oh, I have a hangnail. Let's cut my arm off at the elbow. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have no more speaker cards. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, we'll come back to the council. This is not an action item. Is there further discussion?
Well, I have a few more comments.
Okay.
I think it's confusing to the public that one speaker says previous council did not approve a specific plan. Then our mayor says we do, in fact, have a specific plan. So could you address that, Mr. Blum?
We currently, the city did develop a draft specific plan. There was a lot of workshops generated, and that was developed. It went through the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission approved it. And it went to council, and the council did not approve it, but instructed the major components of it to be placed into the 1998 zoning ordinance, which a major component of that specific plan was the design guidelines, and that was placed into it. Several of the improvements that were talked about in the draft plan have been implemented. They upgraded the downtown, additional parking, additional better signage. Those upgrades that we've been doing to the downtown in the last 5 years were talked about in this draft.
Oh, I just really think that we have to have smart growth. And if we do not have a specific plan, we need one. And if we have somewhat of a specific plan not approved, we can work on that. So we're not saying to drag it out for a year like one of the speakers said. No, we really need to move forward. And, you know, we had a gentleman speak a couple meetings ago, Tom Jones from Cal Poly. He extended his hand to us to come out and do all kinds of wonderful things for us. He did a presentation in Grover Beach to the Grover Beach City Council, and I attended that meeting. He did a brilliant job. The only thing I would like to see him do this with us as well. However, besides just getting input from staff, I'd like him to get input from the council, but most of all, input from the community. The community owns this city. So I would like to see input from them as well, from everyone, and then do the presentation. I just think it would be great to involve Cal Poly. I mean, it's a great source, that resource we have right there, and we're not using it. So I think that's very important. I think we need to think about or consider any project that comes before planning, but that before the final approval, it would come before council, even on the consent agenda. I think that then things don't slip through the crack. And I think that's going to be very important. A lot of cities do that. And I just think it's that's something that really needs to be considered. And I am concerned with setting precedents. And has staff done anything with Mr. Tom Jones?
We've had communications with him, and as soon as the school year is just finishing, and we're making arrangements to sit down and talk with him, and okay. he has his summer free in relationship to that. So we're already in that process of talking to him.
And I'm sure you'll be one of the members speaking to him.
That's true.
So if you'll let him know, besides staff input, we'd
right.
like council input
mm-hmm.
and especially community input.
Right.
That's the most important thing, because you know the community who has appealed these projects, and mm-hmm. the city belongs to the community. And then there was mention of we're having a study done on parking, and it's going to be coming mm-hmm. before council in late August. Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to see some type of a meeting, not televised, working on parking prior to that. Because people are saying, well, this will drag, you know, if we have a moratorium, not liking that word, it'll be drug out for all this time. Well, this is part of dragging it out, is waiting for the study to come to us, then talking about it again. And let's talk to the community about it prior to the parking study company coming before council. And I agree that we need to have the type of workshop that we have, round tables, roll up your sleeves, and get out there and listen to the public. So I'm very interested in that. And that's all I have at this time, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Jay, you have any other comment at this point, Councilman Wright?
Well, yeah, I do. You know, I'm real disappointed. I don't know, disappointed is the word. It just kind of hurts a little bit. You know, this isn't malicious. This isn't political. This isn't anything other than what I believe, and that's what I was elected to do, is present what I believe. You know, I've thought this through on many levels. I've talked with hundreds of you in the community about this. Very supportive, by the way. You know, I chose 90 days for a reason. Mr. Sadek was saying, well, there's nothing in the pipeline. That one was shot down and da-da-da, whatever. That's the reason I wanted the 90 days. That's the reason I wanted this period of time. It would give us about 30 days to talk about some of the issues downtown. Articulation. Extremely important to me. If you'll notice, that project that came forward that was turned down was 35 feet straight up in the air. You know, articulation is what builds a community, builds the visual aspect of a community, meaning that as you go up to the second floor, it's set back in, or there's designs or something. You go to the third floor, it's set back in, you know? But developers say, well, Bill, you can't do that to me. If you do this, you're taking away all my square footage, and it's not going to be profitable. It is not my job to make a developer profitable. I am pro-development from the standpoint that it can benefit our community, but I will never make a decision to make a developer profitable. I think that's insane. So this 90-day period that I talked about, it included things like the articulation aspect, like the rate agenda. This is your town as much as it is any of ours up here, and we need your input. But, you know, when I hear what some of you are saying, Mr. West, I just met you tonight. You're a nice man. But by gosh, you're selfish. You know, you say that it wasn't able to be put together because of the joint meeting and because of this meeting, and let you want to go ahead, you want your project done. Well, you're not alone. There's others that want that done too. You know, mine's the last one. You know, no, yours isn't the last one. You know, and that's why we need a timeout. That's why we need to take a break and give all of you the ability to create and help us build the future of Pismo Beach. We need your help. That's all that I'm asking for. The mixed use portion of it, as many, you know, all that I'm talking about is C1. That is the downtown commercial core. I am not talking about the mixed use, the outlying areas of that. I'm talking about that at all. Because there are considerations that need be had with Randy Bloom. He and I have talked about this at length, that we are going to need to expand our downtown C1 zone for the future. We cannot sustain this community without expanding our commercial core. That's what pays the bills. And we're being very careful of our Shell Beach commercial core as well, on how we can develop that. It all plays into it. You know, I met with Randy the other day, and I had a phone call with him the other day, and I'm sure he'll be happy to verify this publicly. He says, Pismo Beach has flat been discovered. There are people coming in, investors coming in from everywhere, trying to capitalize on the ground that we have now. Is that not true, Randy Bloom?
That's true.
That's what's happening. And I'll tell you, you allow your first three-story building to go in. The guy next door says, will you let that one go in? You don't have a specific plan, so how dare you tell me mine can't go in? And the next thing you know, we're off and running with downtown Pismo Beach becoming another Monterey or Hermosa Beach or some of these other areas. I only am asking for 90 days. I give you my word that I would never ask for more than 90 days. If, and I won't support it either, if we will not meet jointly in earnest with the Public and Planning Commission during that period of time. You have my word. I will not do that. No emergency? Let me tell you, there's an emergency waiting to happen in that downtown core. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is I'd like to ask Arlene Gonzalez-G. She just made a very profound request, and I don't know how many of you got it, and I'm so proud of her that she did. Is that I would like to ask you to agendize a future meeting of the Planning Commission's decisions being held to the next City Council meeting. So okay. I'd like to give you an opportunity because I'd like to see that happen. The last thing that I would like to say, I do not have a conflict of interest in that downtown core. I do not own the property that my bicycle shop is located at. I have been in direct contact. I was hoping I was going to get the letter by tonight's meeting because I knew there was going to be somebody out there that was going to say something. And the basic ruling from the FPPC is that I receive no more benefit than any other business in the downtown core. And the simple question that they said, or the simple statement that they made be, is how could reasonable... No, that wasn't the word reasonable. I told you the word, city attorney. Do you remember? How could a person ever be elected to any city council under those kinds of circumstances? And they're absolutely right. And we have case law from the past that also talks about that in letters from the FPPC. So I don't want to hear any more about that. I am not in violation of those types of things. So I'm asking my fellow city council people here to consider everything that I've said. It is something that this town needs to do, is take a 90-day timeout. Take a look at some of the issues that are important.
Okay, I'd like to make some comments also. But, Randy, I think, Mr. Bloom.
Yes.
I think the statement that you made, I think there is a certain energy that has come to town, but...
That's correct. We have... But if you look back in the last 15 years in the town... We've had very little commercial growth and applications come through. In the last 2 years, we've seen commercial projects come in. Part of that is that some of the implementation, the general plan policies that were come out of implementing the not adopted specific plan provided the platform for some of this new development. But yes, our land prices have gone up, and our area has become more attractive than in the past. Let me explain some of the things that are going on that try to put in perspective. Is currently we are working with Wilbur Smith and Associates to do a parking analysis, and the analysis is all encompassing. It's not just looking at one piece of property and it's all or nothing. It's a complete overview of opportunities, management practices, financing. It's a complete package. I believe that information is critical for the City Council and the Planning Commission to take a look at how future developments are going to occur. Because if there isn't a commitment to municipal parking, then the direction has to be that each project has to provide its own, and rightfully so. So the parking issue is a pivotal part. The other part is, as a staff level and in reflection of direction from the Planning Commission and hearing comments from the City Council, is that we are currently working on a proposal to have the design guidelines freshened up and added a historic component to it for that deal. That process can be parallel going right now, and we're presently working with a consultant to refine a proposal on that.
Yep.
The parking issue and the design issues are two major components of a specific plan. With those two components in place, the rest of it kind of falls into place. I believe that we've got the tools in place to take a look at projects, and with the studies that we have going on that will come back will give us a clear vision of how we should go in relationship to municipal parking. And I think once you know that, and there is a decision and a commitment and a business commitment that will last for several years, the development community will flow in behind with that direction.
Okay.
Well, does that help?
With that, let me ask a couple questions. Mm-hmm. I had asked how many projects have had the initial review that would go into the core. I'm 690 Dolliver there's been no decision made on
that's
that.
Correct.
There's an appeal there.
Yeah.
I have 640 Dolliver they haven't even come before the Planning Commission yet for review because they're doing some design changes.
That's correct.
Okay, and then there is 555 Cypress that you haven't gotten anything on since 2004.
That's correct.
So is there any other projects that you're aware of? I'm sure you've gotten some interest questions and things like that, but are there any projects that are ready to come before the Planning Commission right now?
We have one project on Price Street by Hines that we're conceptually working on.
Is that MU or C1?
MU.
We're talking about
it's
C1.
It's MU.
The primary project that's been approved in the C1 area is the Benson project. There is a small mixed-use project on Hines that has been approved. Those are the only two approved projects in the central core commercial area. The other projects that we've talked about haven't gone through that process other than the 690 Dolliver project.
So there are no other projects in the C
in the central commercial core zone
that have come.
The only remodel project other than those two projects talk about is, if you remember, a Splash Cafe had a second-story addition in the back.
Right, right.
And that's been, those three are the key three, what you call projects in the central core area that we've dealt with.
So I guess that's really my point, is that there really is not an emergency here. That, distribute it to the community members, distribute it to the Planning Commission, distribute it to the City Council. Let's look at that. Let's take the next 4 weeks, and then let's go ahead and set up a public meeting with the Planning Commission, with more time for speakers to talk and for us to just, you know, exchange information, and let's start looking at that, what we have in place, and go from there. Meanwhile, that parking study is going to be done and to us, and we'll be able to incorporate that in our discussions. I'm just not in favor of any cooling off period at this point. I just don't think it's necessary.
Well, my only reaction to that, you know, that's fine if that's, you know, if you always do what you always done, you'll always get what you always got, and that's what, you know, and that's what's.
Please, no comments from the audience.
And that's how it is. I mean, we're doing the same old thing, you know. Nobody wants to take a stand. Nobody wants to move forward and make some really tough decisions. People want to make the easy decisions. They don't want to be personally impacted. You know, I sometimes wonder why we need a city council at all. But
I have a comment that I've been on this council 4 years. And I've asked many times to have a specific plan brought before council.
Absolutely.
So that it can be tweaked. 4 years and still nothing. So I think it's kind of forcing us in that direction to put a halt to building so that we can do something. And believe it or not, in the long run, the developers will have a clear picture, a clear plan, a specific plan to go by. They will know and not end up losing money by having it appealed and a standstill. I mean, it's for everyone. This is good for everyone. It's not.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to make a motion.
Actually, we can't take any action this evening. If you want to give the staff some direction.
I don't know, Randy. Is that true? I've talked with the city manager. I can't make a motion on this. This is an agendized item that is brought together by.
It's an agendized item.
It's an agendized item
that says request for consideration of a building moratorium, discussion and direction.
That's my motion. Is I'm going to make that request.
Okay, I'm sorry. Could you restate the request so I understand it?
Because my motion is that I would like to enact a timeout for 90 days within the C1 zone of the city of Pismo Beach with weekly joint meetings of the city council and planning commission and public to be established during that period.
Okay. If I understand it, you're looking to enact an urgency ordinance basically prohibiting further development within the downtown core for a period of 90 days.
Where did you get the word urgency from? I didn't say that.
Well, there has to be a mechanism to prohibit.
No plan. So it is emergency then, I guess.
Okay. What I'm saying is the way that you do that, absent any others that I can think of, is an urgency ordinance. That's the way that you have to do this, because we have ordinances in place right now that allow development under certain specific.
That's right.
So you would need to adopt an urgency ordinance, and there is authority for urgency ordinance under Government Code 65858, I believe, when you're considering specific plan zoning changes and so on. There is provision for that. It requires a 4/5 majority. More specifically, it requires a 4/5 majority of the legislative body. In other words, you need 4 votes to enact that. So as currently seated right now, there's only 3 council members. You don't have the necessary votes to bring that urgency ordinance to bear.
There's a flaw in the system. I don't agree with that.
Okay. Well, let me just explain further. Let me just explain further, Bill. If Councilmember Higginbotham were here, then you have 4 votes. You have 4 council members who can vote on it. There is not a situation involving what they call the rule of necessity under the Political Reform Act. And the rule of necessity, very briefly, is if you have a decision that must be made by the council and can legally only be made by the council, and you need additional members to make that, you can bring back conflicted council members. So you could, under those circumstances, bring back Councilmember Natoli if there were no other way to do it. there is another way, and the presence of Councilmember Higginbotham would resolve that issue without having to invoke the rule of necessity. So there is a way around it. The flaw in the system, as you call it, there is a remedy for it. But as currently situated right now, I don't believe that the council can make the necessary findings to invoke the rule of necessity. There's very, very specific.
So anyway, I'm asking that it be placed on the next agenda. Thank you.
Well, we can put it on the next agenda because we will have at least one other member of the council here. And you're just wanting to discuss it again? I'm really not in favor of moving it forward, but...
I think the proposal would be an urgency ordinance, consideration of an urgency ordinance and the necessary findings, and to have the four council members present who can consider that.
So is that what you want agendized?
You know, we got the same four or five people, other than I am good to see Mr. West and others that don't normally come forward. But there's a lot of the community out there, fellow council people, that are very, very supportive of this. It isn't just the same old two or three faces, you know, and I think that they deserve it. They have asked me to bring it forward, and I think that I have that responsibility. You know, if I lose, I lose. It's not personal, and I'm not going to get upset. Quit it. So, Yes, I want to bring it back as an urgency ordinance at the last meeting. I'll confer more with public. Certainly call me at home, 773-4473, and I can always remove it. But those of you that have been in support, you need to make certain that I understand that. If you're not in support, call me at home. You know, I can pull it, but as it stands right now, this is all fresh in my mind, and I need time to think. And as of right now, yes, I'm going to put it on the agenda. Thank you very much for that.
Okay. I'm not with that, but there's two that are, so we could go ahead and do that. Okay. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is city manager's report.
I have none at this point.
Okay.
We do have the pulled consent agenda item to come back to after the council comments.
That's right. We do. Okay. City attorney's report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Late last week, I got a notice from the court on the Denny's case that the court would like to meet with us tomorrow to discuss the further processing of the case. We had anticipated that we were going to be waiting until August 2nd to resolve that case, but since the court has called a case management conference for tomorrow, that case may render a final decision sooner rather than later. So I'll update you by memo as to what happens tomorrow at the case management conference.
And you have clear direction?
I have direction,
Thank
yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that all you have? Okay. Thank you very much. The next item is council subcommittee reports. Does anyone have any subcommittee reports? Does anyone have any subcommittee reports?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do you have anything?
No,
do
I don't.
Anything?
I'm sorry.
Did you have anything to report from the league?
I don't have anything, but I want to ask Bill, when are your...
when is the EVC meetings?
The Economic Vitality Corporation is the third Wednesday of every month. And are you going to consider...
He's the alternate.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He would be in line.
All right, and the next time you go, I've already talked to the board of directors there, and I'd like to go with you and just, you know,
all
tell
right.
them...
Good enough.
Goodbye. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Did you have any reports from the board, from the league or anything? Anything that's going on? No?
I will just say one thing. They're really pushing the... it looks like the way the telecommunications bill is going, the league is very, very disturbed about it, and they're going to have a hearing on the floor on the 27th. It was supposed to be on the 20th, but they moved it to the 27th.
Let's see.
And we're trying to get as many of the board of directors up there as possible so we can sit down with the governor and try to get him behind us. So it's a big issue.
Okay, thank you very much. Mayor Pro Tem has asked to be excused. I'm excusing her. We do have one pulled consent agenda item, and that is item 4L, I believe. Am I correct?
4J.
4J. Okay, and then we had a member of the public that pulled that item. Do you want to speak to it first, give us a little background?
This is the three-year agreement with the County Animal Control Services, and I'd ask the police chief, Joe Cortez, to come up and give a brief overview, and then we can open up to the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. Mayor and Council, this is a extension, actually it's a new three-year contract for the provision of animal services that are provided to the city of Pebble Beach. I don't think we have a severe animal control problem in this town.
No, we don't.
We don't. Most of our calls are generated down on the beach when somebody has a dog that's running at large and gets too friendly with some other dog or another person. That's where we'll get calls for service. Occasionally we'll have strays in neighborhoods, and people are good about calling up. $60,000 would pay for a police officer, and to have that spent on animal services is a hard pill to swallow. If we were the only city that was in this position, my advice to you would be, for $60,000, it's better for somebody else to have those headaches. But I can tell you that at the end of 3 years, when we're paying $60,000, the city of Grover Beach and the city of Arroyo Grande is going to be upwards of $100,000. So about $260,000 for the three cities to get animal services, we may very well be in a position to get the other cities and us to look at doing something on our own. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about the contract is with a 30-day notice, anybody can opt out. And if it comes to pass that we have interest from other cities to explore other options, viable options, we can get out of this contract with a 30-day notice. I can tell you that the county wanted this contract back in their lap, signed by you in March. We balked. I've had about a half dozen conversations with the director of animal services, Dr. Anderson. The city manager has spoken with other city managers as well as the county administrator, trying to make some sense of this. I understand it's expensive to run those operations. It's a possibility we, as the three cities, could do it cheaper. But right now, our backs are against the wall. Come June 30th, 10 days from now, that's the last day of the existing contract. July 1st, with this contract not being signed, we don't have any animal services. My recommendation is that we sign it, and we immediately get busy talking to the other cities to try to come up with a viable alternative so we're not in a situation where in year four, as we're looking at a new contract, maybe we're paying in excess of $70,000 or $75,000 for these services.
Okay. I have a question right off the bat. I mean, they're talking about cost recovery. Is that how they're basing this increase?
Yes. Cost recovery and then with a CPI factor in as well each year. I believe for the first year, this year, because all the cities are in the middle of a two-year contract, they backed off the CPI increase. So this year we have like a 17% increase instead of the 20% increase they'd asked for.
Wow, it just doesn't seem to me that this much of an increase is based on cost recovery for what's happening here in Pismo Beach.
Mm. I agree.
Madam Mayor?
Okay. Yes.
You know, if we did not sign this contract, what will we do with a mad dog or a biter or something like that? And it could be a skunk. It could be a cat, I suppose. But, I mean, we don't have any place to physically house them.
No.
And then once, even if we did have a place to house them, then if we had our own animal what do you call it again?
Animal services.
Animal services. Does that animal service, is that it jointly in South County or whatever eventually, does that have to include euthanasia and all of the other components
Or? There are options. I worked in a city where it was a local veterinary clinic that housed our strays that performed euthanasia. Out of state. California's got a whole different mix of laws, but that's a possibility that we could look into. Mm-hmm. We even looked down south in Santa Barbara County and tried to see if those folks would be interested in coming up, and mm-hmm. the word I got back from there is that you guys are getting a deal at this rate, and we are the cheapest in the county. Some cities in this county, for the first year, could be paying over $100,000. We also talked informally among the other two police chiefs, trying to get something going this year, and we just didn't have time to do it.
Well, I understand, and I'll support his request, knowing that there's a month, 30 day out.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any questions of staff before I...
You said exactly what I...
I believe Mrs. Anthony wanted to speak to this item, and that's why it was pulled. Mrs. Anthony, are you here?
Yeah, she's back there.
I'm Elaine Anthony, members of the council, Mayor Reese. I certainly understand exactly what the chief is saying because we are in a bind. However, I think that there's some input that I need to let you know about, so whatever happens in the future is very important. I am a resident and a taxpayer in this city. I also serve as the president of the Central Coast Animal Protection Society. I was the one that requested this item be pulled from the consent calendar because I have deep concerns about the city being overcharged by the county for animal services for the next 3 years. Pismo's population is not changing that much, yet the enormous amount we are being charged for the quality of service we get was apples of service, but not anymore. For fiscal year 06-07, we will be charged $39,322, a 17% increase, as the chief just said. In 07-08, the cost will be $48,835, another 20% increase. And for the fiscal year 08-09, it will be $60,650, an additional 20% hike. That comes to a 57% increase in 3 years. Will our population increase by 50% in the next 3 years? No. Is there a plan for added services? No. Another concern, is the care of the animals at the shelter being improved? The answer is no. Numerous reports are coming in from citizens, from shelter volunteers, and various shelter visitors as to the deteriorating conditions, including filthy kennels and cages. At times, there's no food or water for the animals, missing pet ID cards, and lack of medical attention when needed. Where is all the money going? The director of animal services, a licensed veterinarian, has a plush new office, and other areas are being remodeled for people comforts, but it seems that animal care has a low priority. The Animal Services Contract Enforcement Committee, a long-time advisory committee which is composed of law enforcement representatives from all cities within the county, as well as sheriff's department reps, has not met during the five-year term of the current animal services director. Much-needed communication is sadly lacking. Animal services has the cities over a barrel, and something needs to be done, and now. I'm requesting that the Pismo Council consider doing two things immediately. First, request a 90-day extension on the current contract, which ends June 30th, as the chief said. This is in order to look at the situation. A second is to notify Sheriff Hedges and the County Board of Supervisors that conditions and practices at Animal Service should be investigated from outside sources. For the benefit of the residents / taxpayers of this city and the pets in case they're lost and end up at the shelter, please don't simply sweep this under the rug. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Anthony, would you be willing to write a letter, pointing out all those things that we could maybe take to the sheriff and to the County Board of Supervisors?
Yes, I would be very happy to. There are many, many things. In our organization, we get lots of complaints. There are things that we can document and include, and we'd be happy to work with the city on that.
That would be great. Okay, thank you. And I just have a question of the chief. Tell me about the Animal Enforcement Committee.
Yeah, Chief John DeRohan from Morro Bay served on that when he worked for us in Pismo. He was the committee chair. He was a committee member. He continued that in Morro Bay. Also, a member of CHP is on the committee. The sheriff is on the committee. But Chief Durohan is the police chief, the municipal representative to that committee. I spoke with him today. In Morro Bay, this contract didn't even come before him. It's just handled through the city manager's office. So he wasn't aware of these steep and severe increases of 20% a year. He told me that committee has not met. He was surprised that this was coming forward in such a manner with no meetings being called. He couldn't recall the last time that committee had met. So he is going to push for a meeting as soon as possible.
Okay, thank you.
I got a question for him, too.
Please,
go ahead. Did you read the format of the contract that they have in here?
Yes.
I'm trying to find that 30-day option that we have. And I don't see it in there. Is it?
It's in there. Okay. Could you maybe, Mr. Eads, find that for us so that Councilman Natoli's question will be answered? And then
it's on page 108.
Term and renewal.
Yeah, I want to see that in writing.
I'm sorry, which page?
It's under term and renewal.
Okay, term and renewal. Okay, I missed it. Thank you.
Okay, it says this agreement should be effective on the first day of July 2006.
30 days.
Should be subject
good.
Okay. So
as long as it's in there.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay. Was there any other questions of staff or anything?
I'd just soon make a motion that we approve the animal services contract with full knowledge that our chief of police is going to be discussing future opportunities in South County, and that we are all aware that there is a 30-day out.
I'll second that, just as you presented it, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay, under discussion.